हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव हरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay. So, continuing on page 50. One who performs severe austerities for sense gratification is fearful to the entire world, whereas a devotee who performs even a single amount of devotional service is a friend to everyone. But, so when one's doing great works for sense gratification, it's going to cause trouble for everybody. That's the basic principle. Because by doing austerity, you become more powerful. You become more qualified to get the results of your area. But the problem is by doing that, then you become more fearful to others. Because if you're engaging for sense gratification, whose senses are you engaging for?
Your own.
So that means is that if they're going for their own sense gratification, then there's not a guarantee you'll get yours. Therefore, they'll be fearful. But because the devotee is doing devotional service, it's not about himself, it's about Krishna. Everyone being connected to Krishna, it doesn't get in the way of anybody's sense gratification. So then people relax, they're more open, they're more... Is that what it says?
There's no conflict.
Yeah, there's no conflict. But here, he's conflicting with everybody. The whole universe is disturbed because of his austerities to enjoy himself. He wants Brahma to give him a benediction that he can take Brahma's place. Then he's going to turn everything upside down. So and then he'll say, "I'm happy." But basically the disturbance of at least most of the universe, you know, what's below Bhumandala may be happy, but what's above Bhumandala and above won't be happy. You know, so that's the problem.
Viparit nature of demons.
Yes, yes. We just turn it around. Yeah. No. Lord Brahma said, "O son of Kasyapa Muni, please get up. Please get up. All good fortune unto you. You are now perfect in the performance of your austerities, and therefore I may give you a benediction. You may now ask from me whatever you desire, and I shall try to fulfill your wish. I have been very much astonished to see your endurance. In spite of being eaten and bitten by all kinds of worms and ants, you are keeping your life air circulating within your bones. Certainly, this is wonderful." Right? Because it's the principle that in Satyayuga, you can maintain your life as long as you can keep the life air circulating within the bones. Right? So, you know, in the Dwapara, as long as you keep the flesh on the bones, you'll stay alive. You don't have to breathe, you don't have to eat. Like that. What is it in Dwapara? Sorry? Breath. Okay, yeah, you have to maintain the breath. And in Kali Yuga, a handful of rice. So in theory, you can do that, but still, how many people do you hear doing this? Other than Hiranyakashipu, have you heard of someone else? No, others are doing their great austerities and that, and they may be very thin and all this and that, very absorbed, but we've never heard of this. So even though it is the principle that can work, then we're not seeing it so often. So Brahma is impressed. Okay, this guy is focused. Right? Yeah.
Well, the life there have some natural relationship with being in the bones?
It's just a matter of yogic that you just have them move there instead of... They're moving in the lungs, but they can move wherever. You know what I'm saying? you know, it was definitely, I say, you know, the yogi gets, ends up in the path of a bunch of, you know, Brazilian army ants, and then after they pass by, then the bones get up and walk away or something like that. They wouldn't know what to do with that. You know. Okay. Certainly this is wonderful. Even saintly persons like Bhrigu, born previously, could not perform such severe austerities. Nor will anyone in the future be able to do so. Mm-hmm. Right? So it hasn't been done, it'll not be done again. And it's actually a good thing it'll be never done again. Because anybody who can do this, if it's for spiritual understanding, then great. Then, you know. But if it's not, they're going to be the biggest trouble around. As we shall see, Hiranyakashipu will be the biggest trouble in the universe. So, within these three worlds, who within these three worlds can sustain his life without even drinking water for 100 celestial years? That'd make a serious, what do you call it? Advertisement for some drink company, right? My dear son of Diti, with your great determination and austerity, you have done what was impossible even for great saintly persons. And thus I have certainly been conquered by you. O best of the Asuras, for this reason I am now prepared to give you all benediction, according to your desire. I belong to the celestial world of the demigods, who do not die like human beings. Therefore, although you are subject to death, your audience with me will not go in vain. 17-21, Srila Prabhupada comments. It appears that human beings and asuras are subject to death, whereas demigods are not. The demigods who reside with Lord Brahma in Satyaloka go to Vaikuntha in their present body, bodily constructions at the time of the dissolution. Therefore, although Hiranyakashipu had undergone severe austerities, Lord Brahma predicted that he had to die. He could not become immortal or even gain an equal status with the demigods. The great austerities and penances he had performed for so many years could not give him protection from death. This was foretold by Lord Brahma. So the way he spoke it, it's saying the one thing and it's facts, but at the same time it's also saying other things. Like that. So he's speaking very nicely. So it's not that he's just there. He's just, you know, you're from the group that's going to die, so therefore whatever benediction you like, then I'll try to give you because of your great focus. Because to do this, he has to have really good focus and determination. These are all good qualities. So Brahma's appreciating those qualities. The only problem is that, you know, the demons always misuse these proper qualities. So that's why he's in the category of he's going to die. Right? Those on Brahma Loka that are from there, they don't misuse. Right? So, you know?
It also brings out the intensity of the hatred that he can focus so much because of how much he's hating Lord Krishna.
That's why no one has done it before, no one will ever be doing it before, because how often do you get a demon who's, you know, dropped out of the spiritual world, you know, it's giant and giant. Yes. So it's a rare thing. You'll see, Ravana will do it to a great extent, not as much as Hiranyakashipu, but quite good. Right? He catches all the planets and ties them up and puts them on the steps to his throne. So he walks on them when he goes up to sit on his throne. You know, so that's not bad. You know, he works out what's the absolute best chart for, you know, his son's birth, and he gets all the planets and forces them into those positions. Like that. You know, so he's good. He's good. You know? Like that. But Hiranyakashipu,
it didn't work out.
That's because Shani, being a devotee, doesn't really worry about these things. So he quickly moved to another place that was really bad. And because of that, then he cut him. He took his sword and cut him off at the knees for running over there. And then that's why then Shani moves very slowly. So, but the point is so even though he's so powerful, the devotees still win. Yes. Okay. Verses 22-38, Hiranyakashipu offers prayers and requests benedictions. When Lord Brahma agreed to give him benedictions, Hiranyakashipu prayed not to be killed by any entity for superiority over the entire universe and for the 8 yogic perfections. Sri Narad Muni continued, like, yeah, nothing much. Just
interesting that he's done an austerity that no one else has done before, but he still doesn't have the yogic perfections.
No. Yeah, because it didn't say when, because you have to get up and, you know, you have to be focused on your eye and everything like that. So what he was meditating on, it doesn't say. Or if he was, he's meditating on your eye, but in an inimical way. So somehow or another. Yeah. Sri Narad Muni continued, after speaking these words to Hiranyakashipu, Lord Brahma, the original being of this universe, who is extremely powerful, sprinkled transcendental, infallible spiritual water from his kamandala upon Hiranyakashipu's body, which had been eaten away by ants and moths. Thus he enlivened Hiranyakashipu. As soon as he was sprinkled with the water from Lord Brahma's water pot, Hiranyakashipu arose, endowed with a full body, with limbs so strong that they could bear the striking of a thunderbolt. So that means that the first part of the conversation before this was happening between Lord Brahma and the bones. Yeah, so only Brahma could carry on such a pleasant conversation with just some bones, right? Yeah. He must have still been within the ant hill, so he probably didn't have to look at the bones just to see this pile of ants. Okay. With physical strength and a bodily luster resembling molten gold, he emerged from the anthill a completely young man, just as fire springs from fuel wood. Okay, so then, yeah, you just see this anthill. So not so much problem. Seeing Lord Brahma present before him in the sky, carried by his swan plane, Hiranyakashipu was extremely pleased. He immediately fell flat with his head on the ground and began to express his obligation to the Lord. So you have to have so much potency that he's on his airplane up there, but you can still hear and have a conversation. So he must be very, how you say? You have to be powerful to be able to speak like that. So Srila Prabhupada comments, in Bhagavad Gita is clearly stated that there are many types of yajna performances recommended in the Vedic literatures, but actually all of them are meant for satisfying the Supreme Lord. Yajna means Vishnu. In the third chapter, so we can see is from this morning's discussion, when Prabhupada uses these terms like yajna means Vishnu, it's not that he's just kind of saying that. This is the technical, you know, method of how it's going about. Does that make sense? So we'll just, oh yeah, he says like this, but you know, it could mean that. But no, this is technically what it is. So that's what we're meaning is, okay, you have yajna, but when they say, the scriptures say yajna, it means Vishnu. So all sacrifice must be for the pleasure of Vishnu.
So it's not that it can also mean
Vishnu. Yeah, no, it's exact. When the acharyas give a definition of the word, that's the meaning. Though, you know, Max Müller may have so many other meanings for it, like this, but that's not actually the position. Mm-hmm. Position is, because if you take another meaning, you get everything connected to Krishna. All, because sacrifice or yajna means that all activities are going to be, you're going to be performing an activity that gets a result. So if we say yajna means Vishnu, that means all activities and all results are for Vishnu. Now, if we accept another definition, will we get that result? And if we don't get that result, how Krishna conscious is it? How actually intellectual is it? Right? To be able to see everything, every action in connection with the Lord, that's a very elevated position of thought. So even though Prabhupada's saying it very simply, it's actually a very, very developed approach. Okay? But because he says it so simply, we think, oh, he doesn't know anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say the doctor is there and he's the best, but he happens to be a friend, you know, his neighbors and their kids sick, so he comes over and he tells them, no, you have to rest, drink plenty of fluids and all that, don't run around too much like that, you know. And then when he leaves, then the kid thinks, hey, my mom told me the same thing, so my mother's as much a doctor as this guy, or that doctor is only as good as my mom. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the whole thing, is that Prabhupada uses lay language, but the way he's using it, actually, if you understand, he's using it on, you know, a very scholarly level. Otherwise, why do scholars read the books and they appreciate it? Does this make sense? So just connecting this with the this morning's method. Yeah? In the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that one should work only for satisfying yajna, or Vishnu. The perfectional form of human civilization, known as Varnashram Dharma, a perfectional form of humanization, that's a nice one, is specifically meant for satisfying Vishnu. So that's the meaning. When you understand it's for Vishnu, then it's Daiva Varnashram. If you're only looking at it as duties and piety and action and results, that's Varnashram. But when you see that it's connected to the Lord, that's Daiva Varnashram. Does that make sense? There is only two.
What's a Suri Varnashram?
The one where you don't see it connected to Vishnu. See, we're just trying to be nice. Because you see it connected to Vishnu, that's Daiva Varnashram. You don't see it connected to Vishnu, that's a Surat Varnashram. Like Hiranyakashipu, it's following Varnashram. But it's a Surat because it's not connected to the Lord. So, devotees will say, oh yes, well this Varnashram is mundane. Yes, Surat Varnashram is, but Daiva Varnashram isn't. It's what's practiced in the spiritual world. Does that make sense? So that's why Prabhupada's giving it. But we'll get caught on the words, because Varnashram can be both. We don't say Daiva Varnashram every time or Surat Varnashram every time. I think Prabhupada only uses Surat Varnashram very, very rare. Because the point is then we'll use, oh, it's Surat, oh, they're demons. All it means is it's not connected to Krishna.
And it does say that anything not connected to Krishna technically is demoniac.
Yes, that's there. So the Upanishads especially are more strict on this. But the Upanishads don't deal so much with, household life. They deal with sannyas. That's the whole point. So, therefore, it's connected, it's good. It means, if it's transcendental, it's good. And if it's not, it's just not. So, in the Veda, in the Upanishads, you have paravidya, and you have avidya. They don't have aparavidya. Aparavidya means the material knowledge that could be taken either way. So Varnashram is one of those. Varnashram is a system, so we can call it just Varnashram. But it's supposed to be for serving the Lord, so therefore it's called Daiva Varnashram. You know, so when it's not used for the Lord, then it's called Asuric Varnashram, but the system is Varnashram. Like the kitchen. Is it a devotee kitchen or is it a demon kitchen? Depends on the conscience of the person cooking. But a kitchen's a kitchen. So Varnashram is Varnashram. But you use it how it's being made here, Yajnavai Vishnu, then it becomes Daiva. And if you don't, you just follow it because of the material benefits you'll get, that's a Asura. You know, so nowadays, talking about, oh no, but it's us, and about what about us, and we need that's not technically a Asura. But that's the whole point of the Bhagavatam's approach. Even though it's the natural commentary, it's for everybody. While the Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, is specifically for those who are not in family life. Anybody can take advantage of it, but the language it uses is that. Just like we've gone through, you go through those chapters on, the forest of material enjoyment. But from that, you can learn very nicely how to perform the duties within Grihastha Ashram. That's what it's for. But if you take those same principles and don't connect it, then it becomes the other side. You understand? So that's the whole thing, is that aparavidya means it goes either way. I connect it to Paravidya, then it keeps the name Aparavidya. Right? But if I don't connect it to Paravidya, it becomes Avidya. So the same knowledge goes either way. So Varnashram, you connect it to the Lord, Daiva Varnashram, don't go as the Surat or Avidya. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so basically you could say Para Varnashram or Avidya Varnashram. It itself is Aparavidya. Does that make sense? It's Aparavidya. You connect it, then it becomes Para also. You don't connect it, it becomes Avidya. That's the whole. That's why it becomes confusing, because the same thing can go both ways. Right? You should see Priyavrata, he's dealing very nicely with his wife. And they're both going back to Godhead. Someone else is dealing nicely with their life, and they're all both, you know, how you say, having a good ride in the bucket. No. Does that make sense? Yeah.
I don't know what that phrase means.
You don't know.
He hasn't been here.
I see. How does it go? It means I don't even remember how it goes.
Yeah, I don't remember how it started. I think take it off.
It's a quote from the. Who is it? Man, wow, it's just gone blank. I don't even remember who wrote it. So. Oh, going to hell in a bucket, but I'm sure enjoying the ride. That's the. So I can't remember who wrote it, but you know, one of the well-renowned acharyas and, how you say, rock podity. So, yes. Therefore, Krishna says, I am the enjoyer of all sacrifices because I am the supreme master. However, less intelligent persons, without knowing this fact, worship demigods for temporary benefit. Therefore, they fall down to material existence and do not achieve the desired goal of life. See, because there are people that are not trying to be demoniac, but they don't know about devotional service. That's why we just use the generic term here. Hiranyakashipu's following, he's an asura. So if you said asura varnashram, he has no problem. Right? So this term asuric, it's not a derogatory term. You know what I'm saying? So calling Hiranyakashipu an asura is like calling someone from the United States an American. You understand? It's their term. Just like we take, smarto, it's a bad term. No, that's what they call themselves. They're as a community, they're called smartas. You know, we may have a bad like that. Does that make sense? So for them, asuras, that's who we are, yeah. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, but you have the general public, they're following Varnashram, they're trying to be pious, trying to be nice, but they may not know about transcendental, so they're just following it in an ordinary way. Technically it's asuric, but it's not necessarily that they identify as an asura. So that's why we generally just call it Varnashram instead of Asura. Because those who are pious would be disturbed. Because, you're calling me a demon? No, we're just saying if it's connected to the Lord, it's you know, pious. And if it's not, it's not. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's why the term is used for that.
Asuras have a relationship with the Lord.
Yes, Asuras have a relationship and Asuras don't.
And then they're the innocent.
They're the innocent, but they're either following one or the other. Whether they know who they're following, they don't know. You know, they're trying to be a nice guy. But you know, just lack of association, so they don't know what's proper. Okay. However, less intelligent persons, without knowing this fact, worship demigods for temporary benefit. Therefore, they fall down to material existence and do not achieve the desired goal of life. If, however, anyone has any material desire to be fulfilled, he'd better pray for it to the Supreme Lord, although that is not pure devotion. And he will thus achieve the desired results. Right? So, Prabhupada's pointing out is that you connect it, the yajna is done connected to the Lord. So your yajna that you're doing is for your material benefit, but it still should be connected to the Lord, because he's the one that's going to sanction it anyway. So if you recognize, then you will have that devotional aspect, though you'll also get to have the material aspect. So material aspect, you'll get that material result, but it also will carry with it the happiness and distress that the material things carry. But the devotional side of it will only carry the devotional benefit. So that's why mixed is not recommended, because of the difficulties that come with it. In other words, mixed isn't recommended compared to pure. But mixed devotional service is highly recommended compared to mundane activities. Does that make sense?
Is this approach could be taken either for karma mishra bhakti or bhakti mishra karma?
Yeah.
What is it that is the essential distinction between the two?
What's your intent? In other words, what's your ultimate goal? If your ultimate goal is pleasing Krishna, but now you have lots of material desires, then you deal with that.
Okay.
You know, that'll be karma misra bhakti.
Like kardama muni praying.
Yes, like that. But that's kardama muni praying. Yes, because his ultimate point was: as I have material desires, I need to connect all these nicely. So therefore, if he gets married, he can engage all these nicely. Right? But so that's different from daksha, who's using bhakti misra karma. He knows about the Lord, all these things, he respects his position, he surrenders to the Lord, so he can get his karma done. His ultimate goal is the karma, not bhakti. So, actually, in the Vedic system, for it to work, you actually have to use bhakti, misra karma, or bhakti, misra jnana, for it to work. But, that's why, because they're using it, they don't understand what we're doing. So people that use bhakti, misra karma, can't actually understand what is karma, misra, bhakti. They think it's the same thing. Right? So that's the point.
And that intent comes from association rather than
by association.
Knowledge. Like someone doing.
Yes, no, it's association. It's not knowledge, because otherwise, great scholars they get bewildered. Then you'll see those who are, you know, it may be karma, misra, bhakti, but it's more about the karma and less about the bhakti. So when you have devotees that are more focused, like the Prabhupada society, then they're actually in a more advanced state. But if they're not so culturally developed, they'll sometimes be seen as less developed. No, yes, we've sang like that, we've done like that, all that guys say like that. You go and hear the Mayavadis speak, if it's a general crowd, they'll be talking about karma yoga. Means literally, means it'll sound like, if we get into technical on the thing, it'll sound just like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because their point is yes, through bhakti you can elevate yourself up to a particular point, but ultimately then their point is it's void, rather than bhakti is the main point.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're saying? No, I'm just saying it's like, because one day I saw the pigeons. They're flying, and there's a bunch of bees flying after them. And someone explained they do that because the pigeons smell bad, and bees don't like things that smell bad. Yeah. So I just thought, okay, nice. But now that pigeon just flew by, and then after you get a whiff of them, they don't smell good.
Why are the bees flying after dogs and stuff? Old people.
Because they're not up there where they are.
Oh, okay.
They're in the trees, the birds are in the trees.
Aerial.
Yeah, you know, so in other words, they flew by and they're, you know, so, you know. The dogs were flying, they'd be going after the dogs, don't worry. Especially wet dogs, they'd really, the whole hive would go after them.
Pigs, flying pigs.
Yes, flying pigs, yeah. Just watch out for all those. Yeah. Yeah, so if you're seeing flying dogs and flying pigs, then either take a nap or go the other way.
Carry an umbrella.
Carry an umbrella, yes. Who said the other day something?
Cows don't fly.
Like cows don't fly. The Russians say. You hear that one? It makes the point, it's a good thing cows don't fly.
You get a pat on the head.
Yeah, no, it's definitely. You know, the other day a bird, you know, makes a mess here. You know, and everybody's freaking out, this little bird up there. Can you imagine they look up and there's this cow up there?
At least it'd be pure.
That's true.
I believe that the Chabrol Baguette is next to the devotion classes at Radha.
Yes.
But even an elephant.
Yes. That was the context. Yes, and then they said there's a Russian saying, you know. What exactly? How is it used?
Yeah, it's good that cows don't fly.
It's good that cows don't fly. Yeah.
When you get there, bird.
Then they say it at that time. Yes. Okay. So next time that happens, then you know what to say. Therefore, they fall down to material existence and do not achieve the desired goal of life. Because unless you worship Vishnu, you won't get Vishnu. If you don't get Vishnu, you've missed the goal of human life. If, however, anyone has any material desire to be fulfilled, you better pray for it to the Supreme Lord, although that is not pure devotion. And he will thus achieve the desired results, okay? And bring himself closer to the Lord. Mm-hmm. Right, so in other words, material life has no real value. You add some devotion, that's unlimitedly better, because it's actually dealing with reality. Right? You can have a whole ocean of, you know, darkness, and one candle is so much more valuable. But within that devotion, pure devotion is the best. And so it should always be understood. Devotion is always good, but pure is better. Mm-hmm. Although Hiranyakashipu offered his obeisances unto Lord Brahma, he was strongly inimical towards Lord Vishnu. This is the symptom of an asura. Asuras worship the demigods as being separate from the Lord, not knowing that all the demigods are powerful because of their being servants of the Lord. The Supreme Lord were to withdraw the powers of the demigods would be no longer able to offer benedictions to their worshippers. The difference between a devotee and a non-devotee, or asura, is that a devotee knows that Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that everyone derives power from him. Without worshipping the demigods for particular powers, a devotee worships Lord Vishnu, knowing that if he desires a particular power, he can get that power while acting as Lord Vishnu's devotee. Since it comes, it means the Lord gives it to the demigods will give it to those who worship them, but you can just go straight to Vishnu and get it straight from him. Right? But the only way Vishnu is going to recognize it with that devotion. But that same way, only if you apply devotion to the demigods, that's the bhakti mr. karma, then will you get a benefit. But the point is those who do that generally don't see it's the Lord who's giving that. Right? So therefore, you should just worship directly. If they do see, then fine. But the point is whose duty is it to worship demigods? It's not ours. Right? So therefore, we wouldn't use that system anyway. Narad Muni continued, then getting up from the ground and seeing Lord Brahma before him, the head of the daityas was overwhelmed by jubilation. With tears in his eyes, his whole body shivering, he began praying in a humble mood, with folded hands and a faltering voice, to satisfy Lord Brahma. Hiranyakashipu prayed to Lord Brahma, "Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord within this universe." Right? So he said, Supreme Lord within this universe. So he's making a distinction between him and Vishnu. But he doesn't like Vishnu, so definitely wants to make a distinction. But it's actually correct. At the end of each day of his life, the universe is fully covered with dense darkness by the influence of time, And then again during his next day, that self-effulgent Lord, by his own effulgence, manifests, maintains, and destroys the entire cosmic manifestation through the material energy, which is invested with the three modes of material nature. He, Lord Brahma, is the shelter of those modes of nature, Sattvaguna, Rajaguna, and Tamaguna. I offer my obeisances to the original personality within this universe, Lord Brahma, who is cognizant and who can apply his mind and realize intelligence in creating this cosmic manifestation. It is because of his activities that everything within this universe is visible. He is therefore called the cause of all manifestations. 16-28, Srila Prabhupada comments. The Vedanta Sutra begins with declaring that the Absolute Person is the original source of all creation. Janmadyasya yataha. One may ask whether Lord Brahma is the Supreme Absolute Person. No, the Supreme Absolute Person is Krishna. Brahma receives his mind, intelligence, materials, and everything else from Krishna. And then he becomes the secondary creator, the engineer of this universe. In this regard, we may note that the creation does not take place accidentally because of the explosion of a chunk. Chunk. Such nonsensical theories are not accepted by Vedic students. Explosion of a chunk.
He points out the folly of it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because otherwise it's Big Bang, it sounds really glorious. It's just a chunk blows up and then the whole universe happens. It's kind of like, you know.
Very childish.
Hmm?
Very childish.
Yeah, yeah. You just see the, you know, the, how you say, the kids in the back there, you know, in the how you say, middle school chemistry class and that. They're doing different things like this. And then here's an explosion and all that in the back. And then a bunch of giggling and that, and then one points out, "Hey, we got Mars this time," you know, and stuff like that. So, yeah, no, it's not happening. Yes.
I just wanted to ask a question on the mood of Hiranyakashipu.
The mood of Hiranyakashipu.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he's being very respectful and. He's honoring Lord Brahma, even offering prayer.
Right.
But actually, he wants to take his throat.
Right.
And both of them know that. So is this like just a cultural exchange, or like?
I mean, how else is he supposed to do?
Hey, Lord Brahma, give me what I.
Yeah, want. But the point is, does he have the benediction yet?
Okay.
So unless he gets the benediction, how can he take the place?
But because he's working on karma, then he did something, so he's going to get it no matter what. Like, Lord Brahma's got to give it to him.
No, because the point is he's Brahma for this universe. He wants to be Brahma. He can be in the next universe.
Okay.
You know, it's not... Brahmas don't change in the universe. You have one Brahma for the whole universe, so there's no change. He wants to be Brahma, go get his own universe.
His own chunk.
Yeah, go get his own chunk. Go blow up your own chunk, you know.
Is
that...
Is Hiranyakashipu trying to flatten Lord Brahma? Because he's saying...
No, because all those things he's saying is correct.
He's saying that you're the shelter of the three modes of nature. You maintain correct.
But he says within the universe. He's accepting him as that secondary position. What he's saying here is correct, but the point is he's the supreme, but he's not the supreme absolute. But he's just ignoring him, just like in the yagya, Daksha's yagya, he ignores Brahma and Shiva, and you know he's respecting Vishnu. So it's the mundane mentality may do this. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just this is how things get done. You want something from him, you speak to him like this, and it works. So
he's praying in a humble mood.
Yeah, praying in a humble mood. So what he's saying here is fact. That's what he says. Let me offer my respectful obeisances under the Supreme Lord, small letters, within this universe. said within the universe. He's not saying of all universes and this and that. So he's not attributing to him the powers of the Supreme Lord. He's just talking, within the universe, he's the biggest. And so as the biggest within the universe, he wants to have the same power so he can be the biggest in the universe. Hiranyakashipu continued addressing Lord Brahma. Your lordship, being the origin of the life of this material world, is the master and controller of the living entities, both moving and secondary, or stationary. And you inspire their consciousness. You maintain the mind and the acting and the knowledge-acquiring senses, and therefore you are the great controller of all the material elements and their qualities. And you are the controller of all desires, right? Because it's already been said before that the demigods can do the things they do, but they've been empowered by the Lord. If the Lord removes their powers, they can't. So Brahma's able to do all this, but it's only because Krishna's given his power. That's why he's the incarnation and the mode of passion. So he takes care of that aspect. Right? But Krishna didn't give the power, he couldn't do it. Right? It's not that he was sitting up there and, you know, couldn't figure things out, was trying this and that, and, you know, there was a fortune cookie sitting there, so he picked it up nonchalantly, without any attachment, you know, broke it open, and pulled out the paper, and he looked at the paper, and the paper said, Tapa. You know, so then he thought, well, yeah, that's not bad, I didn't try that one yet, you know. And so, you know, and then he went about, he got instruction from the Supreme Lord. So then it worked nicely. Yes.
If Brahma's in the goodness of goodness, how's he the duty of passion?
Why is that a problem? The best of all Vaishnavas is Lord Shiva, and he's in control of the mode of ignorance.
Yeah, but Vaishnava is transcendental.
Yeah, but
goodness
the whole. There's a minister in charge of transportation, let's say like railroads. So is that minister a train? Does that make sense?
No.
It doesn't make sense. Okay. The Lord Brahma is in charge of the mode of passion. Does that mean he's
oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stories from demons gaining powers and making demigods to be so fearful. It seems that it reminds us of the story of Dhruva Maharaj, but one who was not connected to authority sampradaya. Like in the sense, Hiranyakashipu, he's so determined. That's why he's becoming so powerful. That's why he can
occupy the fourth realm,
which means that technically it's a battle of determination.
No, it's a point, do you connect things to Krishna or not?
Krishna only.
Hiranyakashipu doesn't connect it to Krishna, his austerities, and Dhruva Maharaj does. So one's a devotee, one's a demon. See, the activities of this world are given as activities that get results. What's the purpose of getting results? Offering to Krishna. So, since it's the Lord's creation, it's not that the rules here are any different than anywhere else. You know, saying the rule that one should serve Krishna with all, you know, one's, how you say, with body, mind, and words. Then is that only a rule here in the spiritual world? They don't have that rule.
They're spontaneously performing
it. No, but the point is that rule there? Is that the principle? Yes. So that principle being there, then all it is it's the same things here. You know what I'm saying? You have the society, and those who can't behave properly are put in the jail. But the rules in the jail are the same as outside. So you're within the jail to practice following those rules so that you can follow them outside the society. But the point is, it's about becoming outside, not about becoming set up in there and everything's good. You know what I'm saying? It's not like a, what do you call it? In other words, the purpose is more rectification, that you're supposed to become devotional and go back to Godhead. You know, while we do hear of some prisons, you know, in certain parts of the world where the guys in the prison are so powerful and all that, and that they actually allow them, their families, to come in and spend time or even be there, and, you know, the whole thing's going on. As long as they stay in the prison, it's all right. You know, but they're bringing, you know, all this and trying to make it all really good.
Luxurious apartments in the jail.
Yeah, you know, so like that. But the point is, they're still in jail. So the human life is meant for, we're supposed to understand it's a jail, so we only deal with it how much we're actually supposed to. You're a king, you deal with it more. You're not, you deal with it less. So that's the idea. Okay. Yes. Hiranyakashipu continued addressing Lord Brahma. Your lordship, being the origin of the life of this material world, is the master and controller of the living entities, both moving and stationary. But he doesn't understand that life itself is coming from the Lord. But the bodies in that we identify as alive, that's coming from Brahma. So? You inspire the consciousness. You maintain the mind and the acting and knowledge-acquiring senses, and therefore you're the great controller of all the material elements and their qualities. And you are the controller of all desires. My dear Lord, by your form as the Vedas personified, and through knowledge relating to the activities of all yogic Brahmins, you spread the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies of the seven kinds of sacrifices headed by Agni Shtoma. Indeed, you inspire the yogic Brahmins to perform the rituals mentioned in the three Vedas. Being the supreme soul, the super soul of all living entities, you are beginningless, endless, and omniscient. Right. So now he's starting to go out beyond. Not that he's not. He does have, because we have 50 qualities. Brahma and Shiva have 55. So this omniscience, these things, they can know all that. Does that make sense? But they're still not the super soul. The super soul is the one that sing, and by the grace of the super soul, then they can sing. Okay, beginningless, endless, and omniscient. So it's all within the context of this universe. Because right? Omniscient means you know everything. So he knows everything within the universe. But beginningless, endless, you know, because he started before the creation. And he'll be there when it ends. Because after then, he'll leave here, go to the spirit, so that you can say he's beginningless and endless.
Right. If these same prayers were offered to Lord Brahma with the mood that he is a guna avatar of Lord Vishnu and approaching him, would that be correct?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So it's just how you want to use them. That's the thing. So what is your understanding? So that's why you see it limits it. Otherwise, most others that they're saying things to Brahma, at some point they'll mention back to Vishnu. You know, Vishnu spoke to you directly, you heard from him. You know, thousand-headed Vishnu lives with you. So, who is it? Gopu Kumar, when he goes to Brahma, he's saying all this kind of stuff. But he's very careful to leave Vishnu out of the equation in this discussion. As eternal time, you reduce the duration of life for all living entities through your different parts, such as movements, moments, seconds, minutes, and hours. Right? Because moment is an 11th of a second, so therefore then the second is next up, then like that. Nonetheless, you are unchanged, resting in one place as the Supersoul, witness and Supreme Lord, the birthless, all-pervading controller who is the cause of all life of all living entities. There is nothing separate from you. Whether it be better or lower, stationary or moving. The knowledge derived from the Vedic literatures like the Upanishads and from the sub-limbs of the original Vedic knowledge form your external body. You are Hiranyagarbha, the reservoir of the universe. But nonetheless, being situated as the supreme controller, you are transcendental to the material world, which consists of the three modes of material nature. Right? So, we'll just continue. Oh, my Lord, being changelessly situated in your own abode, you expand a universal form within this cosmic manifestation, thus appearing to taste the material world. You are Brahman, the Supersoul, the oldest, the personality of Godhead. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme, who in his unlimited, unmanifest form has expanded the cosmic manifestation, the form of the totality of the universe. He poses external and internal energies, and the mixed energy called the marginal potency, which consists of all the living entities. O my Lord, O best of the givers of benediction, if you will kindly grant me the benediction I desire, please let me not meet death from any of the living entities created by you. 29-35, Srila Prabhupada comments. Thus far, Hiranyakashipu has adored Lord Brahma as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and is expected to become immortal by the benediction of Lord Brahma. Now, however, having come to understand that even Lord Brahma is not immortal, because at the end of the millennium, Lord Brahma will also die, Hiranyakashipu is very carefully asking for benedictions that will be almost as good as immortality. Right? So that was the original concept, that he is this, but then he's understanding he's not, because Brahma says, I'm not. And so therefore, then he's making adjustments here. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
How could he actually have such a flaw in his understanding?
Because he's a materialist. It's like you have a million, right? It's a very big number. But it's just one and a bunch of zeros. Okay? Now, if I have a million and I take a zero off, it goes down. But it's still 100,000. Take another zero, 10,000, like this. But let's say you have the million and I just take the one off. Come on, the zeros are fatter anyway. Right? You know? I just take the one off, then what do I have? Yeah. Like that. So that's the whole point, is when it's connected to the Lord, it becomes perfect. So these things are connected to the Lord. Brahma is doing, in one sense, these things, but in another sense, he's not. He's not the Supreme. Because the universal form, this and that, is already existing. Lord Brahma simply meant, based on that formula, he then creates the universe. So many of these things he's involved with, but many of these things he's only very slightly an instrument or hardly anything at all. It's the Lord who's doing. So it's just a matter, if it's primary, it's just Lord Vishnu. He has nothing to do with it. But if it's secondary, that's where he has something to do with. Right? So you see, he was talking about him as the Supreme. But in his connection as servant of the Lord, then certainly these things then have an effect. He actually does. Right? You know, in other words, you understand how eyes work, what's the principle of it, how the Lord sees and everybody can see, and what are the principles that are there. Therefore, then he can create all the variety of eyes that are in the 8,400,000 species of life. So in one sense, means he is omniscient and all this, but in another sense, he's not, because he's only up to what he does within the secondary creation. Does that make sense? So all these things you say, oh yes, is him, but only up to that point. But he's talking as if he is the Supreme. But he's not. He's only actually up to this.
He would say, usually Brahma is called an engineer of the universe. So the whole thing exists from the Lord, then he takes it and he kind of creates it with the help of Maya and modes. That he's
basically. Well, that's what Prabhupada says. You have the architect. They make the drawings, and then the engineer just takes them and the ingredients that he's provided with, and he builds the building. But he's building the building according to the design by the architect, with ingredients that aren't his.
So Brahma would be the engineer, architect would be the Lord.
Krishna, yes. That universal form, that is the blueprint of the universe. Like that. So Brahma just follows that. So that blueprint is in the lotus. And so that's why he's born from from the lotus, he's born from Virat, which is half male, half female. So he's born from there. But he's unborn because he's not born from the person. He's born from the principle of the primary creation.
So who's Vishwakarma?
Vishwakarma, he's the demigods and he builds nice buildings and stuff.
So he builds...
He builds buildings.
Build.
Brahma is the engineer of the universe. He's the engineer of the building that the demigods want. Means as far as engineers in the universe goes, no one's better than him as far as building buildings and that.
Yeah, yeah.
But still, he's not the engineer of the universe.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maharaj, in the first chapter we heard that when motive passion is prominent, the demons become powerful. And it seems there's relation here with the Puranas that are for those in the mode of passion are worshipping Lord Brahma.
Yeah, but the point is you can have that, so naturally there is that demoniac element, but it's a matter of, is it in control or are they clinical? That's the whole point. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So when the demoniac nature is out of control, then they're given the position of asuras. If it's within control, then they can stay within the humans on the 3 months.
So pathological passion.
Yes, he's pathologically passionate. Well, then Brahma is dealing with, you know, the managing the whole thing. But what's recommended is you keep it in control. Okay. Yes.
I always considered immortality and like immortal and eternal to be the same thing. But now it's clear that you use the word immortal when it means to, like, in a bodily concept, and eternal is...
Yeah. And you can say in the spiritual world they're immortal, but we never use the term, they're transcendental.
Yeah.
So that immortal is a term that's here, and it's used for those who live longer than us. Because no one in the universe is immortal. Right?
I guess people use it that don't know about the soul.
Yeah, I mean, they talk about the soul, but they don't know what the soul is.
Yeah.
Hiranyakashipu continued. Right, so the first one is, don't let me be killed by anything that you've created. Right, since he's created everything in the universe, I shouldn't be killed by anything that you created. Right, that should cover everything. Right.
Right there is this call, because it's taking Lord Brahma as the topmost.
Yes, well, that's the whole point. Is he only knows what's in the universe, so therefore he's only worried about what's in the universe. Hiranyakashipu continued, grant me that I not die within any residence or outside any residence. Right? Because where are you going to die? You're going to die inside or outside. You know, so that kind of covers... all it is the one, first one should be enough, but he's thorough. You know, you've been...
Close loopholes.
Yeah, you want to make sure there's no loopholes. Okay. You know, but that's also where the fun is. Also, during the daytime or at night, right? Because that covers time there. Nor on the ground nor in the sky. Grant me that my death not be brought by any being other than those created by you. Nor by any weapon, nor by any human being or animal. Right? So he's just, because he's already said any living entity you created, but so there's no need to say human being or animal. Srila Prabhupada comments, Hiranyakashipu was very much afraid of Vishnu's becoming an animal to kill him, because his brother had been killed by Vishnu when the Lord took the shape of a boar. He was therefore very careful to guard against all kinds of animals. But even without taking the shape of an animal, Vishnu could kill him by hurling a Sudarshan chakra, which can go anywhere without the Lord's physical presence. Therefore, Hiranyakashipu was careful to guard against all kinds of weapons. He guarded against all kinds of time, space, and countries, because he was afraid of being killed by someone else in another land. There are many other planets, higher and lower, and therefore he prayed for the benediction of not being killed by any resident of any of these planets. There are three original deities, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara. Hiranyakashipu knew that Brahma would not kill him, but he also wanted not to be killed by Lord Vishnu or Lord Shiva. Consequently, he prayed for such a benediction. Okay, so in other words, the first one was, let me death from any of the living beings created by you. Then he's given, let my death not be bought by any being other than those created by you. You know? So that means, you know, I say Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. So he's thorough. He's experienced. So.
It's interesting how if Hiranyakashipu was the son of Kashyapa, he must have heard stories about Vishnu killing demons, like, for example, there was a demon faster than...
But you're saying he must have. So why get worried about that? What if he didn't? You know? What if he read him stories about Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs?
That's why he asked those benedictions.
Yeah, what if the Seven Dwarfs, they come and bite my toes? Let my toes not be bitten by anything. You know what I'm saying is that the point is why project? You know, this is what we're dealing with. Does that make sense? Yeah. Thus, Hiranyakashipu thought himself securely protected from any kind of death caused by any living entity within this universe. He also carefully guarded against natural death, which might take place within his house or outside of the house. Hiranyakashipu continued. Because he could say all these things, he won't be killed by any weapon, by any enemy, this and that. He could just die from being old, right? You know, or choke on a peanut or something, right? Because he said living entities, right? That's coming up.
So he said this one was not, grant me that I not die within any residence or outside. Didn't say not that I be killed, but just
yeah,
that I not die.
So there's loopholes within his loopholes. Right? Yeah. But grant me that I don't die choking on a peanut. Yeah. Grant me that I not meet death from any entity, living or non-living. Right? So that's the peanuts, right? Grant me further that I not be killed by any demigod or demon or by any great snake from the lower planets. Right? Because below where they stay, then you have two planets of the great snakes. And they're big, they're powerful. You don't want to mess with them. Right? Since no one can kill you in the battlefield, you have no competitor. Therefore, grant me the benediction that I too may have no rival. Give me sole lordship over all the living entities and presiding deities, and give me all the glories obtained from that position. Right? So it's not that he wants to control it, but he wants the glory that comes from that. Right?
He doesn't want to control them?
No, he says he wants to have lordship over all of them and the glory that comes from being in that position. You know, it's just like, let's say somebody could be the temple president, but no one really notices that or gives him anything, but he gets everything done. He says, no, let me be in this position, and people recognize it and appreciate it. And, you know, so he's thorough. Furthermore, give me all the mystic powers attained by long austerities in the practice of yoga, for these cannot be lost at any times. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, because it is impossible to mention all species of living entity, he recites these verses. Vyasu bihi means by things without life. Ashu ma bihi means forms with life. Thus I cannot be killed by objects of any kind. Sort. Thinking that he could not die, he then asked for another boon. Let me have no rival in battle and supremacy over all beings. Just as you have power, give me power by austerity and yoga that cannot be destroyed. So once he gets the whole thing that he's immortal, Now he wants control of everybody, and he wants all the mystic powers and all that. So, yes. Chapter 4. Hiranyakashipu terrorizes the universe. Seems to be immediate, right? Yes.
Is it that the amount of benediction one gets from demigod is proportional to the amount of austerity performed?
I would think so.
Because if he performs such a great austerity, he could ask.
You can ask all this. You could also ask for blessings for pure devotional service also. You know what I'm saying? And then, like that. But he's not. The point is you have to pay someone some way, so his austerities were greater than anybody, so he's taking full advantage and trying to get more.
So. Often brings out the point that the person being pleased by what they've done offers them the best. So it seems to be how much you're pleased.
Yeah, how much you please. Yes. Does that make sense?
He also prayed specifically for Lord Brahma because of him being the creator. Why he didn't pray for Lord Shiva, for example? It's easier to get.
No, but that Brahma is the one who is creates everything, is in control of everything. Shiva doesn't deal with all that. Pratigya. A demoniac person, in spite of acquiring all the opulences possible, continues to be envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Chapter 4 summarizes questions and answers. Maharaj Yudhishthira asked Narad Muni question 7.5 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Question 7.5, Srimad Bhagavatam 7.4, 43-46. Maharaj Yudhishthira said, O best of the saints among the demigods, O best of spiritual leaders, how did Hiranyakashipu give so much trouble to Prahlad Maharaj, the pure and exalted saint, although Prahlad was his own son? I wish to know about this subject from you. A father and mother are always affectionate to their children. When the children are disobedient, the parents chastise them, not due to enmity, but only for the child's instruction and welfare. How did Hiranyakashipu, the father of Prahlad Maharaj, chastise such a noble son? This is what I am eager to know. Maharaj Yudhishthira further inquired, how is it possible for a father to be so violent towards an exalted son who was obedient, well-behaved, and respectful to his father? O Brahmana, O Master, I have never heard of such a contradiction as an affectionate father's punishing his noble son with the intention of killing him. Kindly dissipate our doubts in this regard. Narad Muni answers these questions in the next few chapters, right? Because it'll take some time to get through this. Yeah?
And it was said that before he worshipped Lord Rama, he wanted to get relationship to Lord Shiva. And then everyone became very afraid that Shiva could actually give him immortality. And then Narad Muni and Father, when they distracted him by changing Narayana, and after this he was Lord Prahlad.
Means the first time.
Yeah, because
oh, so that's from that time he was worshipping Shiva.
Yes.
So he gave that up, so this time he's worshipping Brahma.
Yes.
Oh, okay. From the Nisringa Purana, then it explains the first time when both Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, before they started, you know, before Hiranyaksha went around and made so much trouble, before that they went out and did austerities. And so then when they were doing austerities, they were worshipping Lord Shiva at the time. And so because it was going to be so much, they figured a demon like this doing austerities can't be any good. So then Narad Muni and Parvata Muni, they came as sparrows, right? You know, the little, you heard sparrows chirp? They're really piercing. You know, so a few chirps here and there, okay, but if they're really chirping, it's really annoying, right? So they came and sat down on a branch, not too close, but not too far from where Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha were doing their what do you call it? Austerities. Then they started, you know, chirping, you know, very nicely. You know, the two of them really going for it. And so then Hiranyakashipu gets disturbed, so he kind of, you know, shoos the birds away, you know. So they just move a little bit up, you know, go quiet, move a little bit more up the branch. And then when he goes back to his meditation, they start again. You know, so I'm not sure how many times this went on, but at the end, Hiranyakashipu picked up his bow and arrow and shot at them. So they just flew off. You know, but by this time, he's so angry, his meditation is disturbed, so then he goes back to the palace. They're all surprised to see him so early, and this and that. And he goes, and you know, he wants to get disturbing, you know, some scar out of his mind. So you know, they, you know, party, yes, you know, so eating, drinking, this, that, and you know, so. But unfortunately, that still doesn't get it out of his mind. It was such a disturbing thing. So then he decided he was going to spend time with his wife, right? So then at the time of conception. They were chanting Narayan, right? Yeah, so therefore, he's thinking of Om Namo Narayanaya and thinking of Narad Muni, who's a great devotee. So then his son is Prahlad. Right? So this question is asked in the Sringa Purana, how do you get such a nice devotee from such a demon? Yes. Okay. The rhetorical question uttered by Narad Muni in this verse 36 does not come under this study. Adhyaya Prakashika. The fourth chapter describes how Hiranyakashipu, in hatred of Vishnu, defeated the devatas and also describes Prahlad's qualities, which arose from his prema bhakti. By severe austerities, Hiranyakashipu satisfied Lord Brahma and attained the benedictions he desires. After he received these benedictions, his body, which had been almost entirely consumed, was revived with full beauty and a luster like gold. Nonetheless, he continued to be envious of Lord Vishnu, unable to forget Lord Vishnu's having killed his brother. Hiranyakashipu conquered everyone in the 10 directions, and the three worlds brought... 10 directions, and everyone in the 10 directions and the three worlds, and brought all living entities, both demigods and asuras, under his control. Becoming the master of all places, including the residents of Indra, whom he had driven out, he began enjoying life in great luxury, and thus became mad. All the demigods but Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva came under his control and began serving him. But despite all his material power, he was dissatisfied because he was always puffed up, proud of transgressing the Vedic regulations. All the Brahmanas were dissatisfied with him, and they cursed him with determination. Eventually, all the living entities within the universe, represented by the demigods and sages, prayed to the Supreme Lord for relief from Hiranyakashipu's rule. Lord Vishnu informed the demigods that they and the other living entities would be saved from the fearful conditions created by Hiranyakashipu. Since Hiranyakashipu was the oppressor of all the demigods, the followers of the Vedas, the cows, the brahmanas, and the religious saintly persons, and since he was envious of the Supreme Lord, he would naturally be killed very soon. Hiranyakashipu's last exploit would be to torment his own son Prahlad, who is a Mahabhagavata, an exalted Vaishnava. Then his life would end. When the demigods were thus reassured by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everyone was satisfied, knowing that the miseries inflicted on them by Hiranyakashipu would come to an end. Finally, Narad Muni describes the characteristics of Prahlad Maharaj, the son of Hiranyakashipu, and describes how his father envied his own qualified son. In this way, the chapter ends. Shloka Anushan. Summary of verses 1-20. Hiranyakashipu conquers the three worlds. 21-29. The devatas receive assurance from Lord Vishnu. 30-46. The transcendental qualities of Prahlad Maharaj. Verses 1-20. Hiranyakashipu conquers the three worlds. After Hiranyakashipu received the benedictions from Lord Brahma, he conquered everyone and began enjoying life. Eventually, all the living entities within the universe prayed to the Supreme Lord for relief from Hiranyakashipu's rule. Quote, Narad Muni continued, Lord Brahma was very much satisfied by Hiranyakashipu's austerities, which were difficult to perform. Therefore, when solicited for benedictions, he indeed granted them. Although they were rarely to be achieved, Lord Brahma said, "O Hiranyakashipu, these benedictions for which you have asked are difficult to obtain for most men. Nonetheless, O my son, I shall grant you them, although they are generally not available." Verses 1 to 2, Srila Prabhupada comments. Material benedictions are not always exactly worthy of being called benedictions. If one possesses more and more, a benediction itself may become a curse. For just as achieving material opulence in this material world requires great strength and endeavor, maintaining it also requires great endeavor. Lord Brahma informed Hiranyakashipu that although he was ready to offer him whatever he had asked, the result of the benedictions would be difficult Hiranyakashipu to maintain. Nonetheless, since Brahma had promised, he wanted to grant all the benedictions asked. The word durlabhan indicates that one should not take benedictions one cannot enjoy peacefully. Right, so don't ask for something you can't take care of or maintain. But you want something, but once you have it, you have to take care of it. It's not that just because you have it, it's perfect. Like that, because he didn't even ask for someone else. I'm going to conquer them, I'm going to get all the position and all that, but someone else should take care of everything and manage for me. Right? So he didn't do that. He's thinking he'll just take care of everything. But what he's missing out is Brahma is being empowered by the Lord, so that empowerment is lasts as long as it's necessary. But for Hiranyakashipu, then he only has the austerities to perform. So on the material platform, it can't last forever anyway. Right? But it's a very great piety. So Brahma comes himself, personally gives the benediction, something that's never been achieved by anyone else. But having done that, then he harassed, so if he just did that, then he might go on for a long time. But because he harassed Prahlad Maharaj, the great Mahabhagavat, therefore his piety, as had been gained from his austerity, becomes reduced down to nothing. And so then he's killed by the Lord. Yes.
That's another loophole that you missed that could have happened in the story, that wanting Lord Brahma's position, he could have been turned into a Brahma, like having to do the actual work.
Yes, but the thing is he's trying to avoid Vishnu in this. So he's not going to deal in that way. Does that make sense? So he just wants the power and authority.
Yeah, he doesn't want
to maintain, do all the different. Yeah.
It's nice
how
the story turned around, because when they intervened into the story, that's why it turned around. Otherwise, he would be just out there.
Yes. Sure. Yes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on the same verse. Though those boons are rarely attained, I will grant those difficult boons if you can tolerate them. Difficult means that though he would attain those boons, they would still not be attained. Right? So he says difficult here. It means they're difficult to get, so he just thinks they're difficult to get, but I've gotten them. But he says they're difficult to get because you won't get them. Right? So he'll have everything, but he won't be able to maintain it. So do you actually have it? Like that. Narad Muni continued. Then Lord Brahma, who awards infallible benedictions, departed, being worshipped by the best of the demons, Hiranyakashipu, and being praised by great sages and saintly persons. The demon Hiranyakashipu, having thus been blessed by Lord Brahma, and having acquired a lustrous golden body, continued to remember the death of his brother, and therefore be envious of Lord Vishnu. Footnote 14. Srila Prabhupada points out, a demoniac person, in spite of acquiring all the opulences possible to obtain in this universe, continues to be envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right, he's got so much. Be happy, but he can't be happy. Because he's thinking he's going to become so powerful by that he'll control Vishnu. But he's become so powerful, but he doesn't control Brahma, Vishnu, or Shiva. So he still won't be satisfied. And if you have everything and nothing, everything goes the way you want, how long till you get bored anyway? Hiranyakashipu became the conqueror of the entire universe. Indeed, that great demon conquered all the planets in the three up worlds, upper, middle, and lower, including the planets of the human beings. The Gandharvas, the Garudas, the great serpents, the Siddhas, Charanas, and Vidyadharas. The great saints, Yamaraj, the Manus, the Yakshas, the Rakshasas, the Pisachas, and their masters, and the masters of the ghosts and the Bhutas. He defeated the rulers of all other planets where there are living entities and brought them under his control. Conquering the abodes of all, he seized their power and influence. 3-7, Srila Prabhupada comments. Such a description of the various planets of the universe may challenge modern scientists who think that all planets but this earth are vacant. These scientists claim to have launched excursions to the moon, where they have found no living entities, but only big craters full of dust and stone. Although in fact the moon is so brilliant that it acts like the sun in illuminating the entire universe. Of course, it is not possible to convince modern scientists. Yeah, right? Now, if the thing is it's just reflecting, the light of the sun, like they're saying, then if they're on the moon, it would be so brilliant, they can't see, they can't take any pictures of that. I mean, it's so bright from here, let alone if you're sitting on it. Interesting.
Yes. It's blinding.
Yeah, because they can say, it was, you know, if it was a dark moon, but then you wouldn't see anything either. And that I remember the night it was there, it was specifically a full moon. So I remember going outside and looking at the moon and going, wow, okay. Interesting point. You know, so it's just some dust that, you know, just is, you know, it's just like if it was here, that kind of brightness, just this white kind of dust, whitish, off-whitish kind of dust. Interesting. Huh? Okay. Although in fact the moon is so brilliant that it acts like the sun in illuminating the entire universe. Of course, it is not possible to convince modern scientists of the Vedic information about the universe. Nonetheless, we are not very much impressed by the words of scientists who say that all other planets are vacant, and that only the Earth is full of living entities. So they don't worry about what we're talking about. We don't worry about what they're talking about. So it's not that, you know, if they verify, then we'll feel satisfied. It's like we couldn't care less. They believe, don't believe, it doesn't bother us. We're good.
Srila Prabhupada was specifically asked about this in relation to the TOVP, but how would we make it acceptable to scientists? And we responded, we don't care what they say.
Yeah, we're just trying to show what it is. You know, they like it, don't like it, what do we do? Narad Muni continued, Hiranyakashipu, who possessed all opulence, began residing in heaven with his famous Nandana garden, which is enjoyed by the demigods. In fact, he resided in the most opulent palace of Indra, the king of heaven. The palace had been directly constructed by the demigod architect Vishwakarma and was as beautifully made as if the goddess of fortune of the entire universe resided there. Footnote 8, Srila Prabhupada comments. From this description, it appears that all the heavenly planets of the upper planetary systems are thousands upon thousands of times more opulent than the lower planetary system in which we live. Vishwakarma, the famous heavenly architect, is known as the constructor of many wonderful buildings in the upper planets, where there are not only beautiful buildings, but also many opulent gardens and parks, which are described as Nandana Devo Dhyana, gardens quite fit to be enjoyed by the demigods. This description of the upper planetary system and its opulences is to be understood from authoritative scriptures like the Vedic literatures. Telescopes and the other imperfect instruments of scientists are inadequate for evaluating the upper planetary system. Although such instruments are needed because the vision of the so-called scientists is imperfect, the instruments themselves are also imperfect. Therefore, the upper planets cannot be appraised by imperfect men, using imperfect man-made instruments. Direct information received from the Vedic literature, however, is perfect. We therefore cannot accept the statement that there are no opulent residents on planets other than this Earth. So, is the scientist only believes things that can be viewed with the senses. The senses are imperfect. That means all their information will be imperfect. So, since it's the eye and it's imperfect, therefore they make something that extends the power of the eye, it will also be imperfect. So, Nard Muni continued, the steps of King Indra's residence were made of coral. The floor was bedecked with invaluable emeralds. Right? We're worried about marble, right? The walls were of crystal. And the so he solves the problem that the Abos had with when they first built houses for them, right? When they first built houses for the Aboriginals, they would live outside, you know, because what are you going to do in the house? It's hot in there, right? And if they did live in the house, they would knock holes in the wall, right? So that, because the problem was, is how do you talk to the guy in the next room? You know, there's a wall there. So they made holes in, you know, you sit on the floor and then knock a hole in the wall and the other guy sit on the floor on the other side and then you can talk. He solved the problem because they had, you know, the walls were made of crystal, so he didn't have the problem. See the guy? No? Okay. Yes. And the columns of Vaidurya stone, the wonderful canopies, were beautifully decorated. The seats were bedecked with rubies. The silk bedding, as white as foam, was decorated with pearls. The ladies of the palace, who were blessed with beautiful teeth, and the most wonderfully beautiful faces, walked here and there in the palace, their ankle bells tinkling melodiously, and saw their own beauty, beautiful reflections in the gems. The demigods, however, being very much oppressed, had to bow down and offer obeisances at the feet of Hiranyakashipu, who chastised the demigods very severely and for no reason. Thus Hiranyakashipu lived in the palace and severely ruled everyone. O my dear king, Hiranyakashipu was always drunk on strong-smelling wines and liquors, and therefore his coppery eyes were always rolling. Nonetheless, because he had powerfully executed great austerities in mystic yoga, although he was abominable, all but the three principal demigods, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu, personally worshipped him to please him by bringing him various presentations with their own hands. Okay, so we'll stop there.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premadanta ki.